travel shut down. We all felt that during the pandemic. Sometimes it shut down almost completely. But what did that mean for the industry, and what are the lasting impacts? Does the pandemic, has it changed travel and tourism forever? That's what we want to talk about in this episode of Record of Change. We will hear from a hospitality industry consultant from Canada, and we are getting a rather personal insight on tourism in Nepal. Welcome to this episode of Record of Change. My name is Thomas Reintjes, and I'm here with my co-host Pratap Nair. Hi, Pratap.
Hi, Thomas.
So how has travel impacted both of us? I think both of us, we live far away from our families. My family is in Germany and I live in the US. And you live in Germany and your family is in India. And I think both of us, we couldn't see our families for a long time.
Yeah. The last I was in India was in 2019. And then the pandemic hit in early 2020 March. And after that, I haven't been to India, but people have been traveling, but I haven't been courageous enough to, you know, venture into that uncharted territory of international travel. I have been wary about sitting in a flight for 7 hours, 8 hours. But you came to Germany. You came to Germany last year, didn't you?
Yes, I came in the summer of 2021. Yeah, and that already felt like a long time not being with my friends and family there. So I can only imagine how you feel about not having been able to go to India in such a long time. Nevertheless, you have traveled quite a bit.
Yeah, I traveled on work to France last year. I went to the Cannes Film Festival, and this year also I'm going. And we did some other pleasure travels too. We went to Spain, we went to Portugal.
What has that been like?
Well, there's always this fear in the back of your mind. What if the situation changes? What if flights get canceled? What if travels are severely restricted? But of course, how long are we going to be shuttered within our homes? So it has to be, these risks have to be taken at some point in time, I think. So it's been 2 years we've been locked inside our homes.
Yeah. I always felt like, yes, everybody can feel that. Everybody is impacted by this. But I never really heard much about how the industry is impacted, like when it comes down to individual businesses. You hear like businesses close or they're struggling, but what does that really mean? And so that's why I wanted to talk to Daniel Craig. He is a travel consultant. He talks to hotels and also to companies that service hotels around the world. And before that, he wrote mystery novels based in hotels. And before that, he was a hotel manager himself. So I wanted to hear his perspective. He is in Vancouver, Canada, and I talked to him a couple of weeks ago. And first I asked him, what's the inside perspective of travel being shut down?
I mean, the pandemic virtually shut down travel around the world. It's just incredible. It's still hard to believe it actually happened 2 years ago. And of course, we're continuing to struggle with it. And it's interesting. I mean, we're an industry that's full of optimists. And from the beginning is all about, okay, recovery is just around the corner. And I don't think any of us really expected it to last this long. It's probably best that we didn't know that back then. But we're getting kind of tired of, you know, saying recovery is just around the corner. And then what comes around the corner is a new variant or something else that makes things even more challenging. But it does look like we are slowly getting back to normal. Whether or not we ever get back to normal is a big question.
How hard was the industry hit? I know that in gastronomy, a lot of businesses had to shut down for good. Is that the same in the rest of the hospitality industry?
Well, some have, yes. Some are still struggling. I'm actually surprised. I thought 2 years in, more properties would have closed. The big impact, I think, is that a lot of people who were laid off or furloughed, a lot of employees left the industry, went to find jobs in other industries, and they're not coming back. And so there's a massive labor crisis happening in the hotel industry. So while, you know, we're recovering from COVID, a lot of hotels don't have the staffing to service the demand. And we're expecting a very busy summer in the Northern Hemisphere, if all goes well. But the big question is, will there be the staffing to service? Some properties have had to shut down floors. I don't know if you've noticed, you go out to restaurants these days. I've often thought, wow, it was so hard to get a reservation here, but the dining room is half full. And we've realized that restaurants, much like hotels and other types of businesses, have had to control capacity because they can't service a full dining room. It's not because of COVID restrictions or safety protocols. It's because they don't have the kitchen staff or the service staff to provide the service expectations that they promise. So it's interesting to see how the impact, you know, are manifesting in different ways as a consumer, as well as a business owner.
And what's the answer to that? Do you have advice as a consultant? What do you tell hotels or other businesses how they could react to that?
Yeah, a big part of my consultancy is providing training, and we do a lot of webinars with other hoteliers and hotel companies. And we've done a couple dedicated to staffing shortages and understanding what's going on and how long it's going to last and what to do about it. And so it's a time of recognition for the hotel industry. They've realized, hey, our jobs aren't necessarily that attractive when there are other opportunities out there in technology, etc. Restaurant workers, hotel workers work hard, work shift work, don't get paid a lot, and sometimes don't have the benefits that other industries would offer. And so the hotel industry's really had to rethink that and think about how they can put together a more attractive compensation package to be able to attract some of the people who left back and then new entrants into the hotel industry to fill frontline positions.
And are there also other ideas or ways to make it work with just less staff?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question, because another way that the industry has changed is because of travelers' concerns about safety, automation was really fast-tracked. So the ability to check yourself in, to use a virtual key through your app, to let yourself in a room, to pay remotely, all these things, contactless services and self-service, really were fast-tracked by the pandemic. I mean, it was coming long before the pandemic, but a lot of properties, you know, it requires a fairly large investment in technology and training, et cetera, to automate certain procedures. But hotels needed to find ways to make travelers feel comfortable about traveling and feel safe on property. And part of that was contactless technology. And so that certainly helps. I mean, it doesn't replace a lot of employees, but it certainly handles some of the automation. Even a chatbot, for example, can be programmed to provide instant answers to frequently asked questions. And so it doesn't have to be that complicated, because most traveler questions about a certain hotel are all the same, right? The same handful of 20 questions. And so a chatbot can be programmed to answer all those questions instantly. And while in the short term, it's not going to free up a whole department or replace a whole department, it certainly frees up staff to focus on more complex questions and issues and problem solving.
We as travelers, I don't know if you have a global perspective on this, but yeah, when we book a trip, when we arrive at a destination and when we spend time there, are we looking for other things than we used to?
Right now, I think, yes, generally we are. And I think that the pandemic has made a lot of people rethink travel completely. I mean, do I need to take that trip? Do I need to get on a plane and fly to the other side of the world? The real question is, I mean, often crises make us rethink everything and vow to, you know, do this and do that. And then over time, when the crisis subsides, these commitments subside at the same time, which is sad, but it's realistic. So we really don't know whether travelers will go completely back to traveling long distance and going to conferences and everything they used to be, or there will be a reduction in this type of travel. My feeling is that some of these changes are permanent. Businesses have discovered, hey, wow, you know, it's been a drag that we haven't been able to send our staff all over the world to conferences and to meet our clients, but wow, we accomplished a lot of that through virtual meetings. And do we really need to spend all that money, or could we use it more effectively? And I think businesses, large and small, all over the world are asking themselves those questions. So we're really in the midst of a major stage of disruption. And we don't know how it will all shake out. But hotels certainly have had to look at how they're positioning themselves and where their target markets are and shift resources to the people who are actually traveling and are going to travel in the future.
Shift resources, and earlier also said they are adjusting their strategy or maybe even their long-term vision for what they want to be. So in what direction, where are hotels moving to?
Well, of course, the experience is different for the type of hotel. Resort hotels have performed very well in the past couple of years, at least when travel reopened, some of them better than even before the pandemic, because of course there's so much leisure travel going on, whereas city hotels have really suffered and conference hotels have really suffered. And I think that some hotels are shifting to accommodate, for example, digital nomads, people who realize that, you know, they can work anywhere in the world because they work remotely. And some of that can be in a hotel, but they certainly can't afford to move into a hotel for months on end and pay typical hotel rates. So some hotels are shifting and pivoting to accommodate extended stays. And part of that is to compete with Airbnb and short-term rentals, private rentals, because they've, you know, are certainly going to see a surge because they're very well positioned to take advantage of this travel trend.
So thinking maybe, let's say, 5 years into the future, when we're hopefully living in a post-pandemic world, what changes that the pandemic has brought will stick and will we keep seeing in the experience of staying at an hotel?
Well, I think traditionally we, as travelers, think of hotels as a place where we go, where employees do all the things or a lot of the things that we do for ourselves at home. So they open doors for us, they carry our luggage, they do our dishes, they make our beds, all this stuff, and it's fabulous. You're on vacation or you're busy or working on travel. And I think with the pandemic, we suddenly didn't want that contact. We realized, hey, you know, it's pretty easy to carry my own luggage. I don't need somebody to open my own doors. I don't need daily housekeeping service. I don't need room service. I can order it through an app. So some of us will be happy to come back to a full service property, but I think self-service automation and general automation are here to stay.
How has all of this affected your business as a consultant? I can imagine that your business actually picked up because your expertise was asked and needed more.
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, throughout this, I've often said, I'm so glad I'm not a hotel general manager. I mean, hotel managers, it's been so difficult. And of course, all staff, frontline, et cetera, it's just been so difficult. And I have a consulting business where, I mean, I work with a network of people, but I don't have any staff. And, you know, my office is my computer. And I travel around the world and meet with clients and meet people. And that all stopped. Virtually all my contracts got canceled. And obviously that was a little bit worrisome, but you're right, because part of what I do is consultation and training and content marketing and webinars, et cetera. Slowly but surely, business came back in different forms. And I've been fortunate to be busy enough over the past couple of years. I consider myself very fortunate that I have been busy. I've had lots of interesting and challenging contracts. I'd be much busier and it'd be a lot more fun if the travel industry was booming. But I can't complain. We'll just have to see what's ahead.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Daniel. This was really interesting. And I'm lucky to have you on the show.
It's my pleasure, Thomas. And yeah, hopefully next time we'll have a lot more positive developments to discuss.
So just a few days ago, a judge in the US ruled that masks can't be mandated anymore on planes. So now I don't know how do I feel about that. And there's always something new that keeps you from just freely planning a trip. How do you feel about it, Pratap?
Well, I am always going to keep my mask on a flight.
Yeah, same.
So of course, we are all going to have to take that extra precaution as and when needed. I still think we are not completely out of the woods. We don't know what the next variant is going to be. So yeah, I will always take precautions. I think we all should.
I feel like it's taking a little bit of the fun out of travel, because I feel like when I'm traveling, I just want to leave and go somewhere and then see what's there and not plan ahead too much, you know? And now I feel like I need to do much more planning beforehand before I even leave. And you can't really be so spontaneous as you used to be.
Yeah, so this uncertainty has taken the edge of our spontaneity.
What travel type are you? Are you the one that wants to be pampered and wants housekeeping and room service every day? Or do you subscribe to that trend that Daniel mentioned of more automation and more hands-off travel?
What kind of a traveler am I? I like to be let alone, actually. This is also why I try and book Airbnb. But sometimes, of course, I also would like to support local business establishments, local hotels, like individual hotels and not chains. So we have planned a little trip to the south of France in a couple of weeks, my husband and I, and we do a mix of both Airbnb and hotels.
Right.
And what about you?
Yeah, at first I thought like, oh, automation sounds really cold and unfriendly. But the more I thought about it, the more I was like, yeah, actually, I don't really need housekeeping service every day. I don't need someone to make my bed when I stay at a hotel for 1, 2, 3 nights, right? And maybe it feels even more comfortable when you know that, oh, this room is mine and I can leave my stuff on the bed if I want to or on the floor and I can make it home for a few days and I don't have to worry about anyone coming in and judging me on how this room looks or going through my stuff or whatever. So maybe it can even make you feel more comfortable in this automated environment where you're a little bit more responsible for yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I talked to another avid traveler, Justina Sangden. She's a travel enthusiast and also a tourism expert. She went to university to study tourism, and she's especially interested in rural communities, like her own community where she grew up in an Himalayan village in Nepal. However, when we talked, she was in the opposite of a remote Himalayan village. She was in Dubai. So that's what we talked about first, how vastly different these two places are. And keep in mind, I recorded this conversation already in February because it took us a little while to put this episode together. So here's Justina.
Nepal and Dubai are in extreme ends for different regions. One of them definitely is mountain versus desert, right? And skyscrapers versus rural villages. crowd versus isolation and sense of being in the nature. So these are two extreme different experiences for me. However, they have their own charm and beauty of their own, which cannot be compared to each other. So I am definitely loving it here in Dubai as well. However, a part of me is there back in Nepal, back in my home country.
The theme of Record of Change over our past seasons has been the COVID-19 pandemic, of course. Mm-hmm. What impact has it had on your life?
Wow. So COVID pandemic has probably had the biggest impact on my life so far. So my personality is such that I fall in between the extraversion, extroversion and introversion spectrum. So suddenly being thrown into the lockdown for the first time, it did not quite affect me. Like I was able to accept the first lockdown as a great break from forced conversations or meetings and plannings and day-to-day happenings. So coincidentally, it also came around the time when I had taken a voluntary break from 6 to 7 years long hectic life running in between work and travel in fast-paced cities like Shenzhen in Dubai. And I had come to my hometown on December 2019, Kathmandu, which is relatively a lot smaller city than Shenzhen and Dubai. And I had a plan to stay for a few months with family, you know, and that's when the pandemic hit the world. So 2 months down the road, like that's when sort of reality started to hit me hard. I began to experience like massive effects on my body. I would be wide awake till like 4 or 5 a.m. and wake up by 9 a.m. in the morning with no energy, no desire whatsoever to get up from the bed. It was just insane. Mm-hmm. There are times when I found myself in bed till 5 to 6 p.m. Like I would be awake by 9. I just didn't want to get up from the bed. Just doing nothing, like simply staring at the wall for hours. I used to go blank. So I encountered with a completely different side of me. You know, something very interesting is that sometimes I used to post happy and very hopeful and funny posts on social media, whereas in reality, I used to be extremely low. So, I mean, I now wonder, was it a way to cover up the dark place I was in or convince and motivate myself to push forward? Do others do the same? Well, I'm not sure. Right. Little did I know that the tough days were yet to come. Because in November 2020, my partner's father, he was like a father figure to me, who was a diabetic patient, was denied of regular treatment just because his COVID test came out positive. All this while, my partner was stuck in his home country in India, and India was going through worse phase than Nepal. It just felt so surreal to have someone so close, so far away for months, and digitally again, so close. And just it was just surreal to lose that power and control to just take a flight and go meet somebody that you want to be with. I think the biggest struggle within me was losing grip and losing power and control and losing certainty. So on top of that, the news of his beloved father kept from the regular checkups literally broke my heart. All that he needed was a doctor's opinion and regular checkups. But since his COVID test came out positive, regardless of having little or no symptom of COVID, he was kept from seeing a doctor in time. I virtually joined his journey from struggling to get an ambulance to struggling to get a hospital bed to being isolated in COVID ward to nurses taking away his only means of communication, his smartphone from him, to within a month time, that harsh and heartbreaking, chilling news of him dying alone in the COVID ward. It inflicted, you know, so much deep pain and bitterness in my heart in a way that I started to see this world as a dark place and the era we're living as a sort of cursed phase that not knowing whether we can pass through or not. When I look back today, I actually cannot believe that I have healed to the point that I'm able to laugh my heart out, go out on dinners, study and have plans to work, travel and live with hope. Today, I think I value every single moment of my life more than ever before. And but another thing is that I have learned to accept a life where I can have no control, yet it can be my life.
Yeah, I think many, many people are mentally affected by this pandemic. So in a way, they have gotten sick as well, even though they might have not caught the virus.
Right.
Yeah, and you even try to make the best out of lockdown and the pandemic as well with starting a website about it called stayhomenepal.com. And there people can find news about how the pandemic is affecting Nepal and how the tourism industry reacts to it and how tourism in Nepal is affected. Can you talk to us a little bit about that? So how has the pandemic impacted the country and especially the tourism industry in Nepal?
Well, COVID pandemic definitely has had the massive effects on all aspects of Nepal. And when it comes to Nepal, it is one of the slowest growing economies in Asia. So Nepal was definitely not prepared for the crisis of this level. And the pandemic has most definitely widened, you know, the gap between the rich countries and poor countries, rich and poor communities. You know, the impact is for lifetime. So if we say on ground level, pandemic has affected the country in really, really bad manner, in a severe manner. Schools have remained closed for months. Students and youths have lost focus. If we talk to any student or, you know, any, I've got my own friends who were working the radio and who were like engineering students, and they had plans for coming years to go to Australia, or go to any other country to continue their studies, and their studies plans have been postponed for next 2 years. And for, especially in society like ours, for girls, you know, by the age of 25 or 29 or 30, you know, when we hit 30, we've got a lot of societal expectation and family expectations. So especially girls are going to lose out a lot because of losing out 2 years of their prime 20s. I can see that clearly. On the other hand, people have been pushed out of their regular jobs. You know, adults in the 30s and 40s have been, in a way, disenchanted in their lives. So overall, Nepal is the happiest country in South Asia. So although it is badly hit by the pandemic to its health, education, economy, and all aspects of the country, I see general public will find a way to find happiness in life. And at the end, you know, that's the basis to grow from there.
Thank you for those insights. That was really interesting because you didn't hear much about Nepal in the news. So getting this information really makes a difference. And what about tourism? I mean, obviously, for a while, people could not travel to Nepal, and it's probably still tricky to travel anywhere. But how has tourism in Nepal been infected, and how did the industry also adapt to this new reality?
So the official data, what it says that Nepal welcomed approximately 1.2 million international tourists back in 2019, pre-pandemic. Since 1977, we can see it's the lowest number we have seen in 2021 of international tourists, which was 151,000. And major tourist hubs, if you have heard of Freak Streets in Nepal, which is in the heart of Kathmandu city, it used to be like, you know, hippie street back in 1960s and 70s. So that particular place used to be fully packed by foreigners. But that place remained closed like for 2 years, absolutely 2 years, absolutely closed, and which led to many, many SMEs close down their businesses. We saw at least 15% of the hotels in the country and hundreds of tourism-related businesses shut down. And that was really sad. And especially the closing of the businesses happened during second wave. So about, let's say about 1.1 million people are directly affected because of the pandemic. The government announced about $427 million of relief funds. And again, the labor organizations have alleged that this relief fund is more helpful to the entrepreneurs, to the boss of companies, than directly to the tourism workers who work directly as like trekking guides or cooks or porters and all. So of course, the pandemic phase has brought a lot of conflicts amongst the stakeholders as well. But on the other hand, I was observing that a lot of smart people also took this as an opportunity to expand their businesses, going digitally and strengthening their digital platforms and all. And I see this as an opportunity to filter out the non-performance as well. So as a whole, I can see that it had a major impact. The tourism industry of Nepal had a major impact by pandemic. But then I can also see that there is a possibility to rise.
What kind of digital systems are you talking about when you say that those were strengthened? And this is probably also part of the changes that the pandemic brought that will stick for the future.
That's right. I could see some of the unexpected areas, rural areas, to building their own websites and apps to allow the foreigners to book the hotels, and online payment system, which is a huge thing for rural areas of Nepal. Some of the companies I saw were rebranding their companies, rebranding their company and rebuilding their business models. And somebody that I know personally had his company rebrand in such a way that there was one particular movie, Hollywood movie, to be shot in the base camp of Mount Everest. And in a couple of months, he got that project and he will be hosting I'm not sure which Hollywood stars would be coming, but then he got that project and he was sharing this happiness with me. During pandemic, he was working behind the scene and he was able to, you know, generate new leads in a completely different area as well. So yeah, from the basic point of, let's say, connecting via social media to enhancing their websites and digital platforms, working on SEO, to building apps, few people I could see were really working smart.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Also that you say that small villages might build their own website to promote businesses and places to stay. Because I feel like in the past, it was probably like people would just travel to the general area and then try to find a place to stay overnight the day off, right, without booking in advance. But now there's so much uncertainty in the world and you don't know what's going on and what will the situation be tomorrow. So maybe that's as a more general trend also in tourism, that people want to more book in advance and have everything planned and laid out, so to reduce that uncertainty that has come into the world.
That's true. So I think it is also a big change or a turning point for a country like ours, whereas we've always followed the conventional method of doing businesses. And during pandemic, we have understood that there is a need and there is a trend that we need to catch up with, and which is a good news.
Yeah. As an avid traveler, has your travel behavior changed? Do you travel differently these days?
Yeah, like you said just now, I'm definitely a lot more, you know, alert in terms of safety and certainty. The concept of taking risks and being adventurous doesn't lie anymore in me. I am really super conscious about going to places, exploring new places and being in a crowd. That has definitely changed. And of course, when it comes to the destination that I'm going to travel, that also comes in place, such as Dubai itself is a very, you know, favorite city of mine, one of the favorite cities of mine. However, I haven't explored many places in Dubai yet. I have only gone to places where I could make sure that people have come with, you know, negative PCR reports. So choosing the tourist destination, the travel destination itself has been changed for me. I better like to be certain than going to cities and exploring by myself. Certainty in terms of safety, certainty in terms of, you know, the protocols that are required to be followed, such as quarantine and many other things that we need to, you know, follow nowadays. So, yeah, a lot to do when it comes to traveling nowadays. We can't just book a flight and board an aircraft and leave.
Yeah. Let's hope that the pandemic is in its late stages and maybe soon we will transfer into a post-pandemic world. What do you imagine travel and tourism will look like in the late and post-pandemic, and maybe especially with a look on Nepal? Will it be different from what it was before?
Okay. See, first of all, I wish I could say that there will be, like you said, there will be a phase called post-pandemic. Let's hope. Let's keep our fingers crossed. But then if we have to live with it, then we'll have to find a way, you know, build strategies to live with it. So to answer your question, first of all, when it comes to Nepal and Nepal's tourism, I'm quite hopeful that Nepal's tourism will not take much time to bounce, because we have seen Nepal's tourism bounce pretty hard even after the earthquake back in 2015. What I strongly believe is that Nepal offers like lifetime experiences to travelers. We are one of the very few countries which has strong pull factor. Like, people in the world are looking for experiences that Nepal can offer. We just need to catch up with the digital way, like we discussed earlier, of marketing our products and leave the conventional way of doing businesses, maintain the safe image, a friendly destination that we have built already, and tune it with the digital trend of the world. I think Nepal's tourism has a bright future. When it comes to the trend of travel and tourism, I think social distancing, like I said, will be an inevitable part of our lives for years to come. a heightening appreciation for remote destinations like mountains, safaris, wellness treats, adventure lists, crowded places, etc. will be highly appreciated by travelers. Nepal is an ideal destination for nature tourism, rural tourism, adventure and wellness, and internal transformation tourism. And of course, the tourists market, the biggest tourist market, which was China before pandemic, that is going to change. And we have seen the change already. So we're not sure when the biggest market of tourists, China, is going to open up again. So a lot of tourist destinations will need to work on their business models to attract tourists from different other parts of the world to fill the gap. So yes, there will be changes, but I'm hopeful that tourism will bounce back. Because people are suffocated now. They want to leave, they want to travel, they want to mingle with people while being nice to the nature and keeping sustainable tourism and keeping environment in mind, keeping safety and empathy for each other in mind. That is my hope.
Yeah. And maybe let's end on this. If any of our listeners want to travel to Nepal once it's possible again, what is the one thing that you think they should absolutely do when they're there?
Wow. Since you asked me for one thing, I think it's going to be sitting at the base camp of Mount Everest, looking right at the, you know, right at the peak of the tallest peak in the world, sipping coffee and utilizing high-speed internet and posting a selfie with the backdrop of Mount Everest is something that one shouldn't miss out.
That sounds amazing. I totally want to do that. Thank you so much, Justina, for taking the time. And I really enjoyed this conversation. And it sounds like you're doing much better than during the worst of the pandemic. And it's heartening to hear that.
Thank you so much, Thomas. I really appreciate that. And thank you again to you and team.
Thanks, you too. And I hope we can all be traveling again soon.
Certainly, certainly. You take good care and stay safe.
I did do a little trip to Qatar for work quite recently. In Qatar, I had to download this app. It is a COVID app. It's a COVID tracker app. But with the kind of transparency that you have in countries like Qatar, I wasn't entirely comfortable. But there's no other go. You have to download. If you have to go anywhere, you have to have that app. Even to go to a restaurant, you have to show that app. That will be scanned even to a supermarket, wherever. This, I thought, was a bit sinister, especially, well, we do have that app here in Germany too, Corona One app. But here it's a lot more transparent. It is not mandatory like it was in Qatar. And this was the case in India too. Privacy activists were raising concerns about how your data is being tracked, how it is being sold in the dark web and stuff like that. I do hope this trend is no longer there as we go out and travel more. But this was one of my concerns, traveling anywhere outside Europe and going to countries where there is no digital privacy or transparency to your data.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, especially for someone like me who travels between the US and Europe a lot. So much data is collected on me and I feel tracked sometimes too. And it feels like COVID just added another layer to that, like more data. We have to hand over more data and produce more data and losing control in that way a little bit too. Yeah.
And one thing what Justina said interested me is the fact that Europe gets a huge chunk of Chinese tourists. It's not just Europe. I think all over the world, Chinese tourists go on these, you know, grouped tours, and they bring business to the economy in many European cities, in many European countries, and outside Europe as well. And that hasn't yet restarted. But now that we see Shanghai is under another lockdown, so it looks increasingly unlikely that this year there'll be any change to China's tourism policies, but hopefully that will change.
Yeah. Any exciting travel plans for the summer that's coming up in the Northern Hemisphere, at least?
I'm making plans to go to India finally this year after 3 years.
The The Record of Change team are Anhui Tran, Matthias Jochmann, Stephanie Rabel, Nimish Savant, my co-host Pratap Nair, and my name is Thomas Reintjes. Our theme music is Plasticity by Blue Dot Sessions. Follow us on social media, visit recordofchange.com, and most importantly, leave a review on your podcast app. Thank you, Pratap. Talk soon.
Thank you, Thomas. Bye.